Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. Here's a question for you. How do you get your kids to understand a work ethic, to embrace a work ethic, and furthermore, to enjoy work? Now, there are a lot of people who would wonder why you would put it that way, but I'm going to put it this way very clearly. One of the marks of adulthood, one of the marks of a successful transition to adulthood, and one of the marks of a fulfilling adulthood is enjoying work. If you do not enjoy your work, you're in the wrong kind of work, or you don't understand what it means to give yourself to a great work, to understand the dignity of work, the necessity of labor. One of the realities of our parenting age is that kids now come with a default of non-work. I think a lot of that has to do with the social setting in which they're raised. We're not raising our kids now, and most of us in terms of the family farm, where they're getting up with chores every morning, and they're understanding that's just a part of what makes the farm work. They're not watching Dad the blacksmith in the blacksmith shop right next door attached to the house. They're not involved in the kind of economic life and the work of labor and the distribution of work the way that that used to be. Instead, they live among machines that do a lot of work. They are consumers of the work done by others. They are the observers of different people who are different kinds of work, but they are not themselves given to work. And one of the realities, let's call it a challenge. One of the challenges we have to face right now is that many of our children are finding it very difficult to adjust in a world from play and leisure to work. And understanding that work is not some kind of sentence that we're serving. It's a part of what it means to be authentically human. And I think the transition right now is probably most difficult for boys to men. And that's why today we're going to be talking with Tony Woodliffe. He's written an article in today's edition of the Wall Street Journal entitled, Hi-Ho, Hi-Ho, How Can I Teach My Kids to Enjoy Work? And I resonate with the article. It's one of my clear and present concerns. And I think it will be for many of you on this program as well. The phone number is 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. How do we get our kids, teach our kids, encourage our kids, transition our children to enjoy work, to understand a work ethic? When we come back and start that conversation, I'm going to be laying a biblical worldview foundation for why being made in the image of God leads immediately to the understanding of the dignity of work. Being made in God's image means that we are given a certain capacity and responsibility to work and to find fulfillment in that work. We'll get to that conversation in just a moment, along with an interview with Tony Woodliffe, author of the article published in today's edition of the Wall Street Journal. It really prompts our conversation today. First, to review some other issues in the news, and at my website at albertmohler.com, I published an article this morning entitled Greeting the Future of the Family. It's in the cards. Little tongue-in-cheek there, it's in the greeting card. Some of you are probably aware of news out of Kansas City, Missouri, that the Hallmark Company is ready to join the celebration of same-sex marriage. They're coming out with a line of cards to celebrate same-sex unions. The company is itself acknowledging that this has come in the wake of the California Supreme Court decision legalizing same-sex marriage, at least for now, in California, following on the heels of similar decisions made elsewhere, most particularly in the state of Massachusetts. According to the Associated Press, America's most prominent greeting card producer decided to roll out a line of same-sex greetings after these court decisions. Last year, Hallmark released a line of coming-out cards announcing someone declaring homosexual identity. The Associated Press website had several of these cards for view. One of them, the one that caught my attention most clearly, featured two male torsos in tuxedos. The message is clear. The company is joining the celebration of same-sex marriage. Now, in the Associated Press article, there was a spokesperson for Hallmark who said something very interesting. Let me read to you from the press release here. It says, the language inside the cards is neutral, with no mention of wedding or marriage, making them also suitable for a commitment ceremony. Hallmark says the move is a response to consumer demand, not any political pressure. Now, here's the statement I want you to hear. Quote, It's our goal to be as relevant as possible to as many people as we can, said Hallmark spokesperson, in this case a spokeswoman, Sarah Gronberg-Collell. Now, let's listen to those words again. Here's what she said. Here is Hallmark's announced justification for coming up with a line of same-sex marriage greeting cards. Our goal is to be as relevant as possible to as many people as we can. Now, I want to draw attention to the fact that the spokeswoman for Hallmark here does not mean for us to take those words without significant boundaries. And just to give you an example here, I don't think Hallmark's going to be attempting to be relevant to polygamists. That's just my prediction. I doubt that given all the attention nonetheless given to polygamy and the discovery that there is a fairly significant number of polygamous families and communities in certain parts of the United States, I don't think that her statement here that it's our goal to be as relevant as possible to as many people as we can is going to include that. I mean, for same-sex marriage, they have here the two male torsos in tuxedos standing together at what you assume is an altar. I don't think they're going to come out with a greeting card line with one male torso and then a bunch of female torsos surrounding him in bridal gowns. I'm just a prediction here. I'm just making a prediction. I don't think that's going to happen. So in other words, Hallmark is not just trying to be relevant to everyone. Hallmark is here pointing to a tipping point. And you know what a tipping point is. It is that point at which all of a sudden the momentum has shifted on an issue. All of a sudden something that was in a minority position is now in a majority position. Something in the culture reaches a tipping point, and Hallmark must believe that the tipping point has been reached on same-sex marriage. And by that I mean that they as a company have more to gain than to lose by coming out with a line of same-sex marriage greeting cards. So let me state that again. Here's the issue. They believe, clearly believe, by the fact they're doing this, that they have more to gain than to lose by coming out with a line of same-sex greeting cards. Now, where did that tipping point come? Where, can we point to it on a calendar? I'm not sure we can. But I would suggest to you that even 5 years ago, it is almost unthinkable that Hallmark would have come out with this greeting card line. It wasn't there. The tipping point was not there. Now, somehow, in their equation, it is clear that the tipping point has been reached and the company is coming out with this greeting card line. They say they're not doing it because of political pressure, but because of consumer demand. The second largest company offering greeting cards in America, American Greetings, has stated that it does not now plan any similar line. It will be interesting to see what comes along here. You know, greeting cards are a signal, perhaps a barometer of what's going on in the culture. This is not the collapse of Western civilization with Hallmark coming out with this line of cards. In fact, civilizations usually don't collapse just because of any one big thing. As history will so clearly reveal, it is the unraveling of an entire social fabric. And I am going to argue that greeting cards are an indicator of the general health and direction of a culture. And that's why I find this a very troubling announcement. Barbara Miller, a spokeswoman for the Greeting Card Association, said the fact that you have someone like Hallmark going into that niche shows it's growing and signals a trend. Now, my analysis of this goes back to the fact that greeting cards have become something of a signal of other changes in the culture just related to the question of marriage. Same-sex marriage is not the only trend of note in this regard. Some greeting card companies now offer lines of cards announcing and celebrating divorce. Selected card lines for heterosexual couples are designed to cover both the married and the cohabitating. One company recently released a series of Valentine's greetings for adulterous partners. So what we have here is a major shift in the culture that isn't being caused by greeting cards. It's being signaled by greeting cards. And now communications that are being put into the mail are telegraphing a basic change in the culture or a perceived change in the culture when it comes to marriage, human relationships, and sexuality. Hallmark is sending America a message with the release of these same-sex marriage cards. I would suggest that perhaps it's high time to send a message back. They believe the tipping point has been reached. We will soon see. The Department of Health and Human Services in Washington, D.C., is releasing Bush administration policies that are intended to strengthen protection for healthcare professionals who refuse to be involved with abortions. It is a conscience clause. The administration is proposing a rule that would make it easier for doctors and other medical professionals to refuse to take part for moral or religious reasons. Health and Human Services Secretary Mike Leavitt said, quote, "The basic idea is that people should not be forced to say or to do things they believe are morally wrong," End quote. Now, the background of this, I want you to keep in mind what has just been handed down in California, where the state Supreme Court has said that doctors who are involved in fertility treatments cannot use a conscience clause to refuse to extend fertility treatments to lesbian and homosexual couples. You know, we are now facing the culture war, not just in terms of a presidential campaign, not just in terms of major struggles over big issues like same-sex marriage and referenda and balloting statewide. We're now facing the culture war when it comes to excruciatingly difficult questions of conscience that come right down to your local doctor's office, your local pharmacy, where we have to make the decisions that match the questions of real life. Back to talk about how we instill a work ethic in our children on the Albert Mueller Program.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mueller Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. I am currently working on a writing project, a book project, on the transition from boyhood to manhood in a Christian perspective. And I've been writing and talking about these things for a long time, published a booklet on this that has had a great response. And one of the biggest issues that I stress in this transition, basically a transition from childhood to adulthood, but most importantly from boyhood to manhood, is in finding one's place in the world of work, and a comfortable place, a happy place, a fulfilling place. And you can talk about a work ethic, and that's certainly a part of it, but that makes it sound as if still it's a matter of some kind of imposition on us. It is a matter of being made in the image of God, I would argue, that we are given the opportunity, the facility, the energy, the ingenuity to work, and it is a part of adulthood to find fulfillment in that, and even joy. And that's why this morning I was so pleased when I looked at the Wall Street Journal. I found this article by Tony Woodleaf. It's entitled, "Hi Ho, Hi Ho, How Can I Teach My Kids to Enjoy Work?" He writes in this article about what he and his wife have done in changing some issues in their family life to help their four boys to learn a work ethic. As someone who is very concerned with these same issues, as a theologian, also as a father, I have to tell you, I just resonated with everything he wrote in his article. And it is a pleasure to introduce Tony Woodleaf to the listeners of the Albert Mueller Program. Tony, thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me.
You know, I have to tell you, your article published this morning caught my eye right off. I didn't even have to read the article, just saw the title that the Wall Street Journal editors put on it. And I knew I was going to be very, very happy that even the Wall Street Journal, after all, a business journal that I'd be concerned with work, considered such an article of importance. Why in the world did you sit down to write this article?
Well, I actually have been doing a lot of reading into theology related to work because I don't remember what set me off. I usually write something when I get irritated, which is probably a bad motivation. But I was getting the general message from a lot of what I was reading, sermons and other writings, that the modern Christian theology of work is that you ought to grin and bear it because, you know, after all, at the curse, you know, work is supposed to be unpleasant, and your job really is to evangelize in the workplace and then get home as quick as you can to go to your Bible study and, you know, raise your family. And so work, we've made work this incidental thing, this entirely instrumental thing. And like you, my thought was, well, we're created in the image and likeness of God, who is a creator. So that ought to be a signal that our work does matter. What we do matters. And I think too many people have kind of fallen into the trap of believing that their work is just to pay the bills, and if they're not happy in it, that there's something wrong with them. And I don't think that's a proper Christian approach to work.
You know, I think this can be exaggerated either way, and I, as a theologian, I'm listening to what you say here. I have to go back to the fall and say that one of the clear consequences of the fall is indeed that our labor is more difficult than it otherwise would be. There's no doubt that that God declares to Adam that it will be more difficult now for him to get the produce from the ground. The ground is not going to yield it so graciously as it would have before the fall. There are cosmic consequences to the fall. And that kind of labor, the sweat of the brow, is a part of the curse. But, you know, when you start looking at the biblical layout of the whole question of work, just because it's a part of the curse does not mean it's something that is for us entirely negative in terms of what God is using in this age to bring us unto himself and to shape us into even godliness. Our work is a part of that. When we find fulfillment in work, doing something that is worthwhile and holy And by that, I mean just anything that is productive and morally right, that is making a contribution. You know, I could just point to several people in church history that very clearly understood this, but perhaps none better than Martin Luther with his concept of vocation. Every single Christian has a vocation, something to do in the world, not just in the church, but in the world, to make a difference for the glory of God. And so I would simply encourage you, there are some great theological resources out there, but I share your frustration with the animus against work that is prevalent not only in terms of perhaps many of the sermons and other things you hear, but in the general assumptions of the culture.
Yeah, and I think that's right. And in both cases, it's a failure to recognize that human beings have a creative purpose. You know, we're called to emulate God, and that means that we shouldn't be indifferent to our work. You know, He gave us these bodies and these talents. We're supposed to be concerned with what we do with them, you know, participate in God's creative and redemptive work. And instead, I think sometimes we think, well, we should just pay the bills. That's what work is.
Yeah, there's so many things from your article I'd love to talk about. I thought about several different spinoffs in terms of conversation. For one thing, you mentioned, just kind of glancingly but significantly, after all, you are writing this in the Wall Street Journal, you mentioned that the political left, indeed the economic left, even the Marxists, tend to celebrate labor in terms of physical labor far better than perhaps some of the more classical capitalists. And after all, if you do travel in Eastern Europe or in similar places, you're going to find statues to the worker just about everywhere. And it's true. I was just pondering what you wrote there. It is true that perhaps we have underappreciated that role. But I want to get to the central issue of your article, which is how to make the transition in children. I mean, after all, you write very personally about having four boys, and you and your wife have made some changes in your lifestyle just because you want them to learn how to work.
Yeah, that's right. It was a little scary because I didn't really grow up in a rural environment. I don't know how to. It's been all I can do to stay alive on this tractor I'm using. I don't like snakes. I don't like all this stuff out here. But we felt called to give our children an experience that roots them in nature and roots them in an environment where work is necessary, hard work. Because, you know, we look around and we see children who are being raised by good parents, but they still, you know, they go astray, they get soft. They don't have a sense of looking at work as yielding something valuable. It's sort of a nagging chore they might have to complete from time to time. And we didn't want any of that. We want our children to have something more solid, you know, to look back on. And
yeah.
So that was my childhood.
Now, that's great. You have four boys, and now you're living in a rural environment. Is it a farm?
Well, no, it's heavily wooded. I mean, we've got a few fields, but it's not a farm. We've got a creek and a pond and a lot of trees and tall grass. We live in Kansas, so some of the grass is over
my head.
Sounds
like everything four boys would be looking for, frankly.
Yes, yeah, they like it a lot. They're not old enough yet to do any of the really hard work, so we'll see what they think of it in about 5 or 6 years.
But how's it going in terms of the transition? I mean, and all they were living a suburban lifestyle, and now all of a sudden you're living out in the country where there's stuff to do just to be able to make the place work.
Yeah.
Are they getting it?
They're doing fine. I, on the other hand, have a lot to learn about managing the nature around us. We tend to look at nature as this fragile entity that if you look at it wrong, it'll perish. And the reality is you're trying to beat it back so you can live in it. The kids are doing fine. Mostly we focused on safety and survival right now. Like, you know, we have snapping turtles in our creek, and they like to go down there barefoot. So I had to give them a lecture on all kinds of body parts that can get snapped off if they're not careful.
You know, my guess is that four boys are going to pay attention to Dad when he talks about body parts being snapped off if they're not careful.
Yes, they did.
That is a great thing. You know, just this past summer, my wife and our kids spent some time with a family down in Allen County, Kentucky, doing something very similar, leaving a suburban lifestyle and with three children, two boys and a girl, going to live on a hobby farm. A beautiful piece of property, just really now becoming a part of their lives as they're tilling the soil, doing all the things, and with livestock, learning all kinds of lessons. I think there's some lessons for all of us in this. But regardless of where you live, I want to know what you think about this as a challenge. How are you helping your children to move into an understanding of, appreciation for, embrace of work, even finding joy in work? Give me a call, 877-893-8255. We'll be right back with your calls.
You're listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. You know, awful lot of cultural attention is all of a sudden going to awaken to the issue of work and labor with the Labor Day weekend coming just a few days from us right now. And perhaps in anticipation of that, the Wall Street Journal published a major article this morning by Tony Woodleaf entitled, Hi-Ho, Hi-Ho, How Can I Teach My Kids to Enjoy Work? My eyes went immediately to the article. And we went immediately to Tony Woodleaf, who is our guest on the program today, a columnist for World Magazine. He lives in Wichita, Kansas, with his wife and four boys. He works as a management consultant and as a writer. He's the author of the booklet, Raising Wild Boys into Men, A Modern Dad's Survival Guide. He is also the author of the material you will find at TonyWoodleaf.com. Tony, I want to go back to your article. In terms of raising boys, and we could say raising children, but boys in particular, and I argue over and over again, that is a distinctive responsibility. You suggest that it's going to take a father's pretty clear determination to make sure that they get it.
Yes. Yeah, I think that's right. And you could put a lot of meaning on get it. There's a lot they need to get and a lot in the culture that wants to mislead them.
Yeah, well, let me read from your article because I really loved this. You say, my six-year-old tries to reduce how often he carries his clothes hamper to the laundry room by wearing the same outfit indefinitely. My eight-year-old, meanwhile, leaves the water hose stretched out where I trip over it so that filling the dog's water dish takes less walking. It seems that the only way in a work-is-evil culture to motivate a child to labor heartily is by means of avarice. But surely there's a way to teach children to embrace hard work without buying them subscriptions to Panache, to a magazine. You know, I resonate with that. I mean, we live in a world in which, you know, if there's a shortcut, they'll take it.
Right, right. It's considered a virtue. In a way, and I mean, and I have no problem with being more productive, finding how to yield more productive value with less effort, as long as that doesn't translate into trying to figure out how to do the least possible, because I think there is a difference. And what happens when we detach the inherent value of work from working is I think it leads to a lot of other problems in society.
Yeah, no doubt.
You look at John Eldridge's book, you know. Why it was so popular, I think, in part, was a lot of American men, American Christian men, feel trapped, you know, where they don't feel spoken to in their churches, and they don't feel like their job is meaningful, and the message they receive is just grin and bear it.
Let's go to your calls. The number to join the conversation is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We're talking about helping children to embrace the joy of work. The phone number 877-893-TALK in Louisville, Kentucky. Josh is listening on WFIA. Go ahead, Josh.
Hey, Dr. Mohler, how you doing? I thought I'd call in and just see what you thought about this. Something that my dad always told me that really impacted me was he always told us that work was a blessing and pointed out to us kind of the obvious fact that there's a lot of people in this world that don't get to work. You know, everybody can do some kind of work, but those of us that are healthy Christians and have the physicality to work, we ought to be thankful for that, and that's one thing that he did with me that always made a difference with me.
You know, Josh, I appreciate that. My father was very similar. As a matter of fact, he made work so interesting, I thought, that the day I turned 14 and could get a work permit, and we didn't live on a farm, we lived in the suburban area, but the day I could get a work permit, I began working at least on Saturdays with my dad in a store, in a grocery store, and added hours as I could, as the law would allow going forward. And, you know, I found more fulfillment in that than almost anything else I was doing, just in terms of hour-by-hour contribution and making the link between labor and reward and all the rest. It came very naturally to me. But you talk about the physical health that is required. Let me remind you that throughout most of human history, being disabled in some way from being able to do work was a horrifying reality. Because in a world in which physical labor was the lot of most people, whether it was on a farm or a blacksmith shop or in a factory, even during the Industrial Revolution, to be injured or to infirm and not able to work was a sentence of impoverishment, of dependency, and was just a thought that would be horrifying. And as long as we're alienated from that, we probably fool ourselves into thinking wrongly about work. The phone number to join the conversation is 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. One of the issues we're going to talk about when we come back is working to the glory of God. The Christian concept of doing all things to the glory of God, and that means that God gives us the opportunity to glorify Him in work, not by accepting it as a judicial sentence, but by seizing it as an opportunity for His glory. I want to thank Tony Woodley for joining me on the program today. Tony, it's been great to have you. I want to commend people to go to the Wall Street Journal today. You can go to the opinion section, and you'll find the article there under the Taste Department. I also want to refer you to his book, Raising Wild Boys into Men, and to his website at tonywoodleaf.com. We'll be back with your calls in just a moment. You're listening to the Albert Mueller Program.
Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mueller Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. You know, sometimes just in terms of our media references, we pick up, even through entertainment, some of the signals that we are sending. You know, back in the old black and white days of the sitcoms and the situation comedies and programs of the 1950s and 60s, you know, Dad's work was never really clear. I mean, you know what Marcus Welby did? Sheriff Andy Taylor was, after all, Sheriff Andy Taylor. But what in the world did Ward Cleaver do? I don't have any clue. He dressed in a suit, but he always described it as working in the salt mines, which was obviously a euphemism for labor. You just think about that, and you think, well, you know, we really don't know too much about him. He was kind of the man in the gray flannel suits because we don't know much about his work. Our work helps to define us. We really know a great deal about who we are. Andy Taylor would have been a very different father on the Andy Griffith Show had he been a grocer. You know, you just go down, you know, Lauren Green playing the part of Paul Cotwright. That wouldn't have worked so well in the suburbs of California. It worked on the Ponderosa. And then you work that forward into more contemporary references, and you realize that we're often vague about work. We're often very imprecise and indeterminate when talking about work. It's almost as if it's something anecdotal to us, but it's not that way. It's especially true for men. And when you work with men, you realize that, and especially if you have the opportunity to talk to men who have retired and now wonder who they are after they've retired, because now all of a sudden They were attorney, surgeon, insurance executive, farmer, mechanic, school teacher. And now all of a sudden they're not doing that same work anymore. And it's so much a part of our lives, we wonder who we are. Our children really often don't get that. That's why I really resonated with Tony Woodley's article in the Wall Street Journal this morning. Our children often don't get that. Our children are probably picking up references from us about work that aren't all that helpful or healthy. And one of the ways it shows up, and this is what shows up in the cause of this article in the Wall Street Journal, is that many of our children are showing just horrible work ethics. Now, I want to point out that I believe that it probably was always the case that you had to encourage children to work. In other words, I don't think there are that many children that even, say, in the pre-industrial age woke up saying, I'm going to find my greatest fulfillment today digging stumps out in the field. It probably was something that always had to be a matter of parental encouragement, to use that word, perhaps, you know, even in a more nuanced sense, a lot of encouragement for the child to work. But I think it was just easier when the child observed within the family's life the link between labor and reward. When the family ate what was the product of the field. When the family saw what happens in terms of the workshop, whether it was a carpenter's workshop, a blacksmith, a glassmaker, you name it, it's very different today. Even when the Industrial Revolution came and the father tended to go to a factory to work, there was a very clear understanding that's his role. And I wonder if that's not when a lot of this alienation from work really began to take place. I'm working now for someone else. There's someone else who's a boss, and the boss is perhaps oppressive. And we live in a society that honors the person who's the executive and sometimes dishonors the person whose hands have to get dirty. But there's not one of us here today who would be able to do what we do if there weren't a lot of people willing to do the work that some would consider to be beneath their dignity. And that just reminds us that all good work, all good and honest work, has a dignity unto itself. The phone number to join the conversation is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. The particular concern for us today is helping children to embrace the joy of work, to find the joy of work. And by the way, if you're going to do that, that means you're going to have to show the joy of work. And that may mean that there are a lot of parents listening to this program today who are going to have to rethink the way you talk about your job to your children. That's tough. It hits us all, doesn't it? I mean, it's very easy at the end of the day to come home when we're with our kids and speak about the burdens of the day, the challenges of the day. We're exhausted at the end of the day. And there probably is the temptation that we do not allow our children to see just how exhilarating work can be, how much we would still want to do this. And it may be that we really need to help our children to gain those opportunities. I've made some adjustments. My wife and I have made some adjustments in the lives of our children in order to help them say that. And I have to say, one of the things I enjoy as a parent is seeing a growing awareness of how this works, a growing fulfillment. And so this isn't one of those daunting problems you look at and say, we must throw up our hands, there's nothing we can do about it. I admire Tony Woodleaf and his wife for making the decision with their four boys to move to a rural area where they're going to have to work. Most listeners to this program aren't going to be ready to do that as much as we admire it. But wherever you are, you can make a difference right now by pushing your children into a situation in which they have to work and help them to understand how to find joy in that work. I think it will come instinctively as they begin to see the link between labor and reward. They see the fruit of their own hands. Sometimes, though, you just have to tell them to get it done because it has to be done, and they have to do it. The phone number to join the conversation is 877-893-8255 in Taylor, Nebraska. Barbara's on the line. What do you think, Barbara?
I just, first I want to thank you for taking my call. And I want to say that I believe that a parent's attitude toward work speaks volumes to a child. And I believe that if we show our children how to do a job, do it with them, and give them a pat on the back, you know, and when they're done, okay?
Yeah. Okay, Barbara, yeah, I do appreciate that. I think that does help. I think involving children in our lives is really important. And by that, I don't mean just take your daughter or take your son to work day, which can become kind of a cartoonish response to all this. But I think involving our children in what we do, helping them to understand what we do, helping them to celebrate what we do, find pride in what we do, I think that's really important in order for them to find pride in what they will one day do, to find joy in what they will one day have the opportunity to do. I think this challenge is very difficult for all children, virtually in all places right now. Less so, say if you're growing up on a farm where the entire family is involved in the work. But I think it's a challenge especially for raising boys. Because given the distinctive roles and responsibilities of men and the identity of manhood, if they do not learn how to find joy in work, they may be set up for a very difficult adulthood and a great deal of immaturity, extending far beyond where childhood and adolescence should end. Back with final thoughts in just a moment. You're listening to the Albert Mohler Program. Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. Very interesting conversation. And when we're talking about the whole concept of vocation, vocatio, the Reformation understanding that every single Christian in particular has a distinctive role to play, a distinctive function to fulfill in the society of the glory of God, it goes beyond what we classify as modern people as a job. It goes to the totality of life. It may be that a part of your vocation is to be effective as an agent of the kingdom, volunteering in a nursing home on Saturday. And maybe the job you hold Monday through Friday is not as fulfilling in life as that is, but it nonetheless is the foundation of noble work that enables you to do that. It may be that you're in a position or a job right now that you do not find as fulfilling as you would want. Well, reorient your life in which you either find greater fulfillment or you develop avocations or vocations that are productive, not just play. There's nothing wrong with play, but as a part of your calling that would bring you even greater joy. So that's something to think about, and certainly with our children, we want to be sending them the right signals, inculcating in them the right habits, and sometimes even putting them in the right structures of accountability to make sure that these things happen. And let's remember to show joy in our work where we authentically find it, and we better be finding it. At my website at albertmuller.com, under the section called The Reading List, I published a review this morning on a book entitled 13 and a Day. It's a very interesting book by Mark Oppenheimer on the history of the bar mitzvah. And you may wonder, well, what does that have to do? It's an evangelical Christian radio program? Yes, we have a lot to learn from this. First of all, just as a matter of curiosity, most Americans probably think of the bar mitzvah or the bat mitzvah for girls, the bar mitzvah in particular, as being a universal Jewish practice throughout the years. It wasn't even common in the United States until most of the 20th century. It's been transformed into something that it was not even in the beginning of the 20th century. And it tells us a great deal about the fact that in the Jewish experience, there was the concern of assimilation, of losing Jewish identity. And thus they sought to reach children in early adolescence in order to commemorate by an act of identity what would help to shape them as fewer members of the Jewish community. Well, in reading this book, I have to tell you, I was very interested to see, as a Christian, the history of the bar mitzvah, also to see how this tradition and ceremony has been turned into what is basically now an extended party, often which is more secular even than inherently tied to the Jewish tradition. Even as the boy reads from certain Hebrew texts, in many cases for these Jewish boys, that's the last contact they have with those texts. The whole question of how we help children to go through that period, like it or not, called adolescence and emerge as adults, reminds us that we as Christian parents, too, have a responsibility to inculcate in our children the right kind of self-identity and understanding so that they know who they are. We'll be back next week for Intelligent Christian Conversation. Go to my website at albertmuller.com for a constant flow of information free to you, and we'll be back for conversation with you next week.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmuller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmuller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.